I'm going to keep working as hard as I can to reach as many people of all ages about what I will do, what the experience and the ideas that I have that I will bring to the White House. And I hope to have their support when I'm the Democratic nominee.
What my first days are about is bringing America together. To end the decline of the middle class, to tell the wealthiest people in this country that, yes, they are going to start paying their fair share of taxes.
I submit to you that if a man has not discovered something that he will die for, he isn't fit to live.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It's 5:09, and today is Monday. It's January 18th, 2016. A happy Martin Luther King Day to you, especially if you have the day off today, as most traders in the United States do. It is a holiday for the U.S. stock market, but other markets around the world have been busy overnight. First, let's start with the Nikkei down 191 points, the Hang Seng off 284. The Shanghai was up 13 overnight. Most of the other indices were lower overnight. In Europe, the FTSE up about 18 at 58.21. Again, the U.S. markets are closed today because of the Martin Luther King holiday. There is some breaking economic news today. As you heard Vic say in the news, the president of France has declared what he's calling a state of economic emergency and says it is time to redefine France's economic and social model. Holland has laid out a series of proposed economic measures today. He's given his annual speech to business leaders. He's trying to boost long stagnant French growth and reduce chronic unemployment there. The first of the measures that he's proposing are relatively modest and says he would not put into question, though, the 35-hour work week in France. He is talking about a couple of other things. Measures include loosening some of the worker-friendly measures that encourage companies to hire and new training for 500,000 workers. But he's calling this an economic emergency, state of economic emergency. Also today, we're hearing from the charity Oxfam, which is reporting that the 62 world's richest people own the same as the poorest half of the planet's population. Oxfam also says the richest 1% of the world, 7.3 billion, owns the same as the rest of the world combined. That is the charity Oxfam. Crude oil is the other big story of the morning. Crude oil prices continue to slide. The Brent global benchmark U.S. counterpart West Texas Intermediate is below, firmly now $30 a barrel. It's at $28.54. It fell about a point, percent and a half overnight. That is according to the London Futures Exchange. March loadings show potentially even a lower per barrel cost. As the price of oil continues to plummet. We will continue to follow all of these stories throughout the morning here on The Opening Bell and throughout the morning on The Steve Cochran Show with Your Money. So that's coming up. Well, depending on who you ask, what is happening at the online shoe and clothing retailer Zappos is either a hero's journey, in the words of the company CEO, or an attempt to create an entrepreneurial utopia, or it's a train wreck. Zappos.com is based in Las Vegas. These bosses have replaced a traditional management structure with something called a holacracy. In the past year, all Zappos employees have been stripped of their titles. The company's done away with traditional managers. It has caused a lot of consternation in that company, and people are watching closely. Let's listen to this audio from a Zappos corporate employee pep rally.
I think people wake up to the fact that they're the hero of their own life when they get tired of being the victim of it.
This whole holacracy thing, self-management, self-organization, TO thing, you know, to me, that's our next hero's journey.
All of us are here because we've committed to this journey.
As we design a particular system, people who work within that systems are going to make decisions based on how the system is structured.
Journalist Amy Groth covers business strategy, startups, and entrepreneurship. Her most recent work appears in the online news outlet Quartz. Amy joins me live this morning on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Well, you know, so far the shift to this so-called holacracy has been quite a bumpy ride for Zappos. How bumpy?
It's been tough. And just for some background, Zappos is known for its company culture. Their CEO, Tony Hsieh, wrote a book called Delivering Happiness back in 2010. Shot glasses line the cubicle walls. There are impromptu office parades. So that's the kind of environment that the company had a few years ago. And that culture is being threatened now with this big change. Last spring, the CEO, Tony, wrote a memo to employees saying, anyone who is not in with holacracy, should take a buyout and leave the company. And then the rest of us, you guys who want to stay, we're going to move full force, into this system of self-organization. And last spring, 210 employees took the buyout. And then 2 weeks ago, 50 more employees left. So the company has lost 18% of its workforce through the buyouts.
Well, we're going to be talking a lot about this as our next segment begins. Lots of questions for you because, people are watching this very closely, not only in the business world, but people who like this company and who have kept this company going. It is very, very popular, as you said. We'll continue our conversation about this, the business of shoes, the business of online retailing, after we check traffic in. Good morning, Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
We're back at 519. Good morning. We're talking about Zappos, the online retailer, mainly focusing on shoes. At least that's what they're known most popularly for. Bought a few years ago by Amazon, but now they're doing something where inside the management structure, inside the employee structure, it's called holacracy. By the way, that's derived from the Greek word holos, which means whole. That's the part of a greater whole. And Amy Groth has been writing about this on Quartz. And Amy, I have to ask you, why would they mess with something so popular? And has all of this impacted their sales revenue?
Yeah, that's a good question. The company has actually received increasing pressure from Amazon to hit its numbers the past couple years. The numbers are pretty aggressive this year. I don't know what they are, but that's what I hear. So that's one thing that's going on. Also, the company has really just been stalled in terms of innovation. They are known for customer service and company culture, and they've been really good at it. But now a lot of companies have adopted those things, and they're Zappos needs to create a new competitive advantage.
Well, we can tell you just the latest facts that I've been able to find. Back in 2008, when everybody was talking about Zappos, it hit $1 billion in annual sales 2 years earlier than expected. It debuted number 23 in the Fortune top 100 companies to work for. And now they're actually bleeding employees. You mentioned earlier how they've lost about 14% of the company's, actually even more than that, about, 28% of the company's workforce?
They lost 14% last spring, and then they lost more in the last 2 weeks, so they're 18%. But actually, that's not even the whole of it. It's actually 30% if you just also include attrition or regular attrition outside the buyout.
So the next question I have for you is, are the brains at Amazon going to step in, do you think, and stop this?
I've asked Zappos management that question so many times. I had a conversation with Arun, the COO. He was very adamant that is not going to happen. That's not in the cards. And I've asked employees who have been in meetings, with top management, and they're saying no. There's always that question, though. It's always looming. What if this just continues to, be a real difficult transition? So I don't know.
The company moved from San Francisco to Las Vegas in 2004. How much did that impact its ability to attract people?
Zappos has always had a hard time attracting engineering talent and marketing talent because it's based in Las Vegas. They've gone through a tech exodus. A lot of their best tech people have moved across the border to California. It's been hard to recruit talent, and they have usually just they've used their company culture to attract employees. not, you know, salaries. So they've been paying people, you know, basically market rate salaries or below market rate salaries. But now I think they're looking at the fact that they might have to raise those salaries to attract the right people.
In your reporting, you've discussed with some of the employees, current and former, about this situation. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around this. And I think our listeners, especially those who are in business, too, because it's, you know, you really have, you first of all, you've lost titles. You've lost sort of a management structure. That's sort of like, as one person wrote, it's like a dinner, throwing a dinner party or building an airplane without anybody in charge. I mean, don't decisions have to be made? And aren't there responsibilities? And aren't there things that have to be done in that normal structure of business?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, so the company is now organized in terms of they have all these circles and they have lead links of these circles. So the lead links are kind of like managers. I haven't really sat down in those meetings to kind of observe, you know, like what is really happening here. But I, as I also understand it, Tony Hsieh, the CEO, he still has a lot of influence over things. Arun, the COO, still has a lot of influence. Some have even said just through this whole change, they actually have more influence than they ever did before. So so that's, I mean, that says something.
Yeah, but then there are the others who say that their innovation and their ability to do their job has sort of been impacted by having all of these circles, drum circles, if you want to call them that, and all of these meetings and stuff, because that's all they do and they can't focus on their jobs.
Yeah, no, there is some truth to that. Absolutely. Well, you know, but I will add this. I mean, so, over, you know, the holiday season is Davos's busiest time. And their customer service team actually did not, as I understand it, have to use Holacracy during the holiday season just so that they could just focus on customers. So that says, number one, Zappos is still struggling with this move to Holacracy. But number two, Zappos still wants to put its customers first.
Are there other companies who are thinking about this system or who have adopted this system? And, you know, is there any success with this system?
Yeah. Well, the most high-profile person that I know of outside of Zappos is Evan Williams of Twitter, or formerly of Twitter, now Medium. He was actually the first one to really latch on to this. And I think Tony, you know, talked to Evan at a conference, and he was intrigued. And as I understand it, Medium has had mixed results. They're smaller. They're a startup. It's actually, Holacracy is better for them than it is for 1,500 people. And, you know, I don't know of any real success stories yet. Holacracy is pretty new. It was developed just a couple years ago by an engineer named Brian Robertson. And I think that we still have yet to see if it's really going to work for anyone.
Do you shop at Zappos? Do you have you heard any anecdotal stories from customers who have noticed any of this, or is it unnoticeable by customers?
Yeah, and that's a really good point too. Actually, I did just order something from them last week, and it came on time and everything. And actually, I just spoke to someone at a wedding this weekend, and she told me that Zappos messed up on her order, but then they came through with something at the last minute, gave her a discount and whatever. So as I understand it, they're still treating their customers well, and that is really important to note.
This inability to, I think in your reporting too, you also said that the software development folks also sort of were exempt from this Holacracy mindset. Do you think that's something that will continue? Because they're really having a hard time attracting those people specifically, right?
Well, yeah, so actually, and that has changed a little bit. So Zappos gave, like, its tech team a different buyout than it gave the other employees. So it, you know, gave all those guys a sweeter deal just to keep them on to finish this big tech project. But they, as I understand it, they still have to move to Holacracy. I think everyone is still operating under that system.
Amy Groth is a journalist who covers business strategy, startups, and entrepreneurship for Quartz.com. And you can find her at Twitter at AIMEE, Amy Groth, GROTH. Amy, thanks for being on the opening bell this morning.
Thank you so much.
We'll be following your reporting to see what happens at Zappos, because there are a few of us on our staff, including our producer, Mary, who's very interested in the future of Zappos. This is The Opening Bell on WGN. We're going to take a break. Back with the news next.
It's important not only that we remember what he stood for, but that we pledge to continue his vision to transform our country.
The hedge fund billionaires who are running ads against me right now, and Karl Rove, who started running an ad against me right now, funded by money from the financial services sector, sure think I'm the one they don't want.
Most potent weapon available to oppress people.
Yes.
They struggle for freedom and justice. Is the weapon of nonviolence.
Those are some of the stories happening around the world this morning. Martin Luther King Day, of course. We will have details on all of the big stories throughout the day on the Steve Cochran Show first, coming up at 6 o'clock. But we still have more news for you here on The Opening Bell. Welcome back. It's 5:38, and there is some developing news overseas. Apple staff in Cork, Ireland, at the headquarters there have been evacuated, and there are reports that this may be a bomb threat. Again, this is at the Apple Center in Holyhill, Cork, Ireland. The threat unknown at this point, but hundreds of staff people are seen to be leaving that building. Also this morning, the staff around the country at airports, mainly the baggage handlers, the fuelers, the wheelchair attendants, a mix of workers are planning protests at U.S. airports, and that will include O'Hare today. They're planning to block bridges, march through terminals, and all of it is a protest. A day of civil disobedience. So you might run into delays at some of the airports, including O'Hare in Chicago, with protests today on this Martin Luther King Day. 7 years ago, when she testified before Congress about saving for retirement, labor economist Teresa Ghirarducci became a star and was branded by some as the most dangerous woman in America, because she talked about the dangers of 401ks and told people to get out of them. And then the crash of 08 validated her predictions. Ghirarducci is also a professor of economics at the New School for Social Research. She's the director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis. She's written a new book called How to Retire with Enough Money. And Teresa joins us on The Opening Bell this morning from New York. So, Teresa, lay it on us. How can we retire with enough money?
Sure. The first title of the book was How to Retire with Plenty of Money. But we particularly changed it to enough money because there's a lot of retirement books out there that tell you you're going to be rich if you just follow these three easy strategies. And the whole point of planning for retirement is to make sure you can keep your same standard of living. If you're a middle-class worker and you provide birthday presents for your family members and friends, I want you to still be able to do that. Go to the movies, you know, a couple of times a month. Still be able to do that. So the trick is nothing new. You need to save. What's new about the book is that a lot of people now do not have the right kinds of savings vehicles. The design of the system is really stacked against them. So I help people protect themselves from money management advisors and firms that want their money and pocket big fees. I tell people how to protect themselves from the lure of splurges, which actually doesn't help your neurochemistry in your brain. If you splurge on things, it spikes up your dopamine and your opiate levels, but not your serotonin. So I help provide some consumer advice. But I think the value of the book is the message to fire your conflicted advisor. If your financial advisor is trying to sell you some financial products that they're associated with, they're looking after their own pocketbook, not yours. Go to all index funds. I encourage people to delay collecting their Social Security if they can, but then how to strategize if they have to collect their Social Security. I advise people what to look for when they're voting, that the government programs are a really important partnership in their retirement planning, and they have to understand those government programs. But what I really like about the book, the way the book turns out, is that I poured 30 years of experience in this field into just 119, actually small, humorous, easy-to-read pages. So I think it really works. I think it helps make people stronger feel stronger after they read it.
You know, this comes at a very timely point because just a few days ago, a report was released by Fidelity, a survey that said 55% of Americans don't have enough money saved to cover their basic needs in retirement. 45% of Americans will be able to afford essentials like housing, health care, food, and other things in their golden years. And then there was another report that said most Americans don't even have enough emergency cash to handle a $500 or $600 expense. How do we save for retirement if that's the situation?
Great question. People don't have enough emergency savings, short-term savings, and they don't have enough long-term savings. So what you have to do is separate those two needs. Just like you have to separate your housing needs and your food needs. You have to have separate envelopes, and you have to put some money wisely in each of those envelopes. So don't use your 401k or individual retirement account, if you have one, most people don't, as a piggy bank for emergencies. Even though the design of the system is set up so that you can withdraw money from your 401k and your IRA, don't do it. Actually, you can simulate what some lucky people have, which are traditional pensions, these defined benefit pensions. And I have to disclose, I'm a university professor. I have a pension that's not quite a traditional pension, but I can't touch it before I retire. And when I was in my 20s and 30s, I thought I had emergency needs. So people need to have separate accounts, one for their retirement, one for their emergency savings, and start building those up. Yes, you have to stop spending so much, get rid of your credit card debt. And for people who have mortgages, the best long-term savings account is paying off your mortgage. I know you get a deduction, but it's really not worth that much because you have to pay the bank a little bit while you're getting your deduction. Double and or triple your mortgage payments. You know, pay that thing off, but mainly avoid conflicted advisors. For people in the middle class or above, I recommend that people hire a for-fee-only advisor, completely conflicted, you know, completely conflict-free, that they don't sell any products. They're really hard to find, especially in smaller towns.
You know, Teresa Ghiarducci is a labor economist and a nationally recognized expert in retirement security. The book, again, is called How to Retire with Enough Money. You can follow Teresa on Twitter at T-G-H-I-L-A-R-D-U-C-C-I. That's T-Ghiarducci. Her blog is at teresaghiarducci.org. This is the opening bell on WGN. It's 5:45. Let's get a check of traffic. Here's Mary Vandeveld.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:49. Just a reminder, the U.S. markets are closed today for the Martin Luther King holiday. However, they are open overseas. Last night on the Asian markets, the Nikkei was off about 191 points, I should say. The Asian Dow was off 24. Hang Seng off 284. Shanghai actually was the only positive reading on all of the Asian markets, up about 13 points. In Europe, the market is higher at 5809. That's the FTSE 100. Last week, delegates at the 97th American Farm Bureau Federation annual convention elected Vincent Zippy Duval to serve as the new president of AFBF. Duval is a poultry, cattle, and hay producer from Greene County, Georgia, and served as president of the Georgia Farm Bureau for 9 years. He is the 12th president of the American Farm Bureau Federation.
Farmers and ranchers across this country hold the same values that I do. We all think alike. We're all concerned about just about the same things, maybe at different stages and different levels are different. But we're all family people, family farms across this country that have the moral responsibility to feed a nation and assist feeding the world. And what an awesome responsibility they have, and they take it so seriously to make sure that they fulfill that obligation that they have under very, very difficult situations.
Orion Samuelson joins us on the opening bell this morning to chat about the new leadership of the American Farm Bureau. Orion, good morning. This is the group's first new leader in 16 years.
A new leader, and it was a historic convention because there were four candidates for the presidency. And since Farm Bureau has major membership in the South, And there is a difference between southern and northern agriculture. And because they have maybe smaller farms, they have more Farm Bureau members, and they kind of control the election. A candidate that I was pulling for, Don Vilwalk, who was president of the Indiana Farm Bureau, finally lost out in the third ballot because the four candidates are in the first ballot, and then they start dropping off the lowest one. But you have to have a simple majority to win. So it took three ballots before Zippy Dufall got the 51% margin that he needed. His first name is Vincent, but he's kind of a good old Southern boy. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, you're going to call me Zippy. And so there'll probably be a few fun stories around the country on that. But Zippy Duval, he's a farmer in Greene County, Georgia, and a producer of various grains. And then they have a new vice president, Scott Vanderwall, who is from South Dakota, so that took care of the Midwest, the upper part of the country. And he and his father produce grains in Wyoming, in Goshen, Wyoming, but they're also cow-calf and feedlot operations, so they're into cattle too. So we've got Zippy and Scott as the president and vice president of the American Farm Bureau.
They come in as leaders at a time when there's a lot of work to be done. They're going to be in Washington probably a lot. Do you think Zippy's friendly nature and that the good old boy is going to play well in Washington?
I think it'll play okay because I'm sure that the good old boy style will be used where it fits and not used where it doesn't fit. But you're right. There's a lot to talk about in Washington because one of the main concerns at the Farm Bureau Convention was over-regulation. And there's a farmer from California. He's in the nursery business. His name is John Duarte. And 3 years ago, the Army Corps of Engineers filed suit against him because he had plowed probably less than an acre of lowland that never has water unless it rains, and charged him with destroying a wetland. And he said, wait a minute. We've been farming this and plowing this for years because there's never any water in the hole. He's spending a lot of his own money, $1 million so far, to wow. fight this case. And he's going to court now in March. But that entire over-regulation by the federal government, whether it's the Army Corps of Engineers, the Environmental Protection Agency, is a major challenge for farmers and ranchers.
As a matter of fact, Bob Stallman, on his way out, in his address going out, he sort of gave a rallying cry to the members, saying, you know, you've got to stand up for your rights. And he said, paraphrasing, something to the effect of, you know, when the government regulation gets this bad, it's just downright un-American. Is he on the money on that?
Yeah, I think he is. And the thing that I keep saying at farm meetings is, if you're a farmer or a rancher, you're not alone anymore because you've got OSHA and you've got EPA and you've got FDA and you've got USDA and then you've got the animal rights groups, Humane Society of the United States, and the other groups that are totally against technology like GMO. Because the one thing that Secretary Vilsack has stood up strongly for is the only reason you label something is if there is a safety factor involved. And there is no scientific proof anywhere on the planet that there is any safety issue with GMOs. And the thing that I'm always saying is if you're against GMOs, you are working to help more people starve to death.
And you forgot some initials there. The FAA has been added to that list, too, because, you know, farmers have been using drones for a long time, and now they have to go out and do they have to get a pilot's license now, right?
Not quite yet.
Getting there, though.
Yeah, it's getting there. And I can understand why, because I have a private plane, and when you get, you know, down to altitudes at 1,200 feet, which we do often, the limit now on altitude for a drone is 400, but you find people breaking that rule all the time. Drones, major topic of discussion at Farm Bureau because of the technology they bring to agriculture, whether it's finding lost cattle out in the millions of acres of rangeland in the West or looking at disease and insect infestations on grain farms.
Stallman, his final words were something to the effect of, you know, the farmers every year are being required to feed more and more people.
Right.
And every year they're being treated this way in a manner that's sort of discouraging them from doing what they do best.
And the Secretary Vilsack said at his news conference in Orlando, we are the one country on the planet that doesn't have to depend on any other country for food. That's not the case in, well, China and places like that. So he said we need to protect and preserve and enlarge our ability to feed ourselves.
WGN's Orion Samuelson with the Business of Agriculture. Orion, we'll have you back regularly here on The Opening Bell as our ag expert. That's The Opening Bell for this morning. Again, U.S. markets are closed. The Asian market's down overnight. Oil below $30 a barrel, firmly now at $28 a barrel. Stay tuned for more throughout the morning. The Steve Cochran Show coming up and news throughout the morning. It's 5:56 on WGN.